nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Okay, so just rehashing what we were doing last class. We have our original binary system where we start from a specific material M that we're lithiating, and we decided to extend this to a ternary system, so we added a bit of component X. Okay, and by doing that, we know that there's a point where the material reaches its solubility limit. Okay, and we proposed for this example that there was a compound, the LIYM system, where basically that line corresponds to the appearance of stability of only that phase. And in this case, to the left of that line, we have a mixture of the M-rich phase with LIYM. And to the right of that, we have LIYM mixed with lithium-rich phase. Okay, and of course, that changes linearly, given the lever rule as we go and include X in return. Okay, so, and the additional part is where we also add an additional, along the MX axis, an additional compound. Okay, so then that really divides the system into three main areas, right? One where we have the mixture between, I'm going to call them by color, the red and green phase, which are mixed here, the green and the blue phase, which occur in this triangle, and basically the blue phase with lithium or X, okay? And based on that, we propose, we basically can anticipate what type of voltage behavior we're gonna get, okay? So if we start with our material M, or storage material M, and we dope it with X of A, we can go from this point to that point, okay? In this case, the idea or the example was to lithiate it all the way to reaching the compound, okay? And after doing that, we find that in this regime, from XAM to reaching the compound LIYM, at that point we have our voltage drops, okay, and then we find that little bit over there, and then it just drops to zero, right? Why? Because with respect to lithium reference, the idea is that the voltage is the work of transformation is essentially zero, okay. Then we added a little bit more of X. In this case, we have X of B. And by doing that, we now intersect that additional phase that has a lower potential. Now it's wider, okay? And finally, if I keep adding more X, but beyond the X sub ZM, okay, then we end up with a low potential phase across the board, okay, which may or may not be convenient, right, depending on whether this voltage is high enough and whether or not the properties of that phase are useful. Okay, now, something I didn't mention last time, okay, is the fact that the amount of X, okay, is actually changing as I go along that line. Okay, so here, notice that I start at the composition, well, let's do the most dramatic one. I start X sub C here, okay, and as I go towards the lithium end, I am getting further away from the X-rich side, okay? So basically what I'm doing is I am losing X to the surroundings on my intercalating phase, okay? The material that I'm using now, it's richer on M and Li, and it's less rich on X, right? X is being exuded to the surroundings, okay? So that is something that you should take into account as you do that, because then you have these additional phases that may be appearing as a result of the intercalation process. And in some cases, other things that could happen is that material, as it dissolves, say, in the electrolyte, okay, you can actually end up with that additional phase that dissolves as the material is lithiating. You can end up with that in the counter electrode and could, in theory, in some cases it does affect the performance of the counter electrode. Okay? So, That's one, and you can actually tell how much actually you lose, right? As you start from here, the X-rich region, and you get to that point, you will know if you went, say, for example, from 80% X to, say, 50% X, right? So you know how much X you have lost, okay? And again, this is just a made-up example so that we can do some mental push-ups so that when we see another example, it becomes straightforward, all the different levels of complexity here, okay? And any questions before I move on to a case study? Okay, yes, please.
So you always write everything in terms of lithium, in terms of manganese or cobalt or anything. Is it customary for us to write everything in terms of lithium?
No. As you will see in the case study, you do not have to write everything in terms of lithium per se. It really depends on the type of battery that you have and what are the involved phases or the involved components, right? In this case, I tried to make it as simple as possible. So, and since we've been using lithium as a case study for everything, and because it's also one of the most high-performing materials now, it just made sense, right? So to kill two birds with one stone, right? So, but in general, you can think, as you will see on the next example, that you could have, for example, sodium on this side, right? You could have nickel on this side and chlorine on that side, as you will see on the next example, okay? In chapter 4 of the handout that I gave you, there are at least 5 examples that go well beyond this system, okay? There's a copper-based example, and I think there's also a metal hydride-based example. Okay, so I encourage you to look at that. There you will find other applications of this. I'm trying to give it another spin so that when you read the handout, you can complement what you have learned in class. Okay, so any other questions?
Okay. What is the potential knowing the XCM is?
In this case, I arbitrarily said that, right? But you're right. The question is, why is the potential lower between the green and the blue region, right? So how would you find that out? It depends on the voltage in a two-phase region, okay, corresponds to the Gibbs free energy transformation divided by the ion that you're using times F, right? We know that part, okay? So if this Gibbs free energy of transformation, or if you prefer, the chemical potential driving force between the two phases is large enough, you will have a larger potential, right? So in this case, I arbitrarily said, and that's just me, right, for this example, that this potential or that driving force was lower than that other phase, than in this other region. In practice, what you should do is find for the involved phases, right, X and B, for example, Li, Ym, okay? You need to find out which ones have the lowest Gibbs free energy transformation, and that will, for starters, specify what range in this Gibbs triangle, where would you want your battery to live? Okay, because obviously the larger the Gibbs free energy, the larger the potential, right? So, but it has to be negative, right? And of course, the more negative that potential, the more likely that phase will be to exist, right? Because besides the potential, we also have the thermodynamics to worry about. And these driving forces for transformation not only specify that phase will really wants to go it away from the original phase, okay? It also means that it could actually form other intermediate phases that may or may not be desirable, and unless we capture them initially either in our literature review or in our experiment or in our calculation, okay, then we might end up with other things that we did not capture with the graphic description, okay? So you have to have a catalog, a thorough catalog of what's occurring inside the system in order to describe it properly, okay? Okay. Okay, so the example that I want to show you in this case is the sodium nickel chlorine system, okay? And this is just a case study just to show you a specific application. This is a very successful example, actually. And one of the reasons I liked it is besides that it's in the in the chapter that I gave you. It's also something that has been very successful these days. Okay, and in full disclosure, okay, I grabbed these slides. I asked to the authors a while ago if I could use the slides, but you can go and get the original set of slides from that website. Those slides have been posted, I think, since 2009. Okay, so it's been quite a while. So you can just download them and grab them. I'm just giving it a different spin. I'm not showing you all the slides. I just took a subset that is relevant for today, and I added also a couple of my own. Okay, so but this type of battery, this nickel sodium chloride battery. And now there's actually, they were just researching it as a possibility for something that could actually take over. Okay, and actually they have now a plant in, I cannot even pronounce the word, in New York, right? Now they have a plant in the state of New York where they actually are making these batteries, okay? These batteries are not the kind of battery that you would use for a laptop, but as you will see, you can use them for large devices, which is now that kind of stuff that GE is now interested in, and by no means this is a commercial, right? I'm just showing you what they develop, and actually all the contribution is really from them, okay? So to motivate the topic, okay? And when they told me about their system, I found it extremely exciting. So something that I didn't know about trains, okay, is that trains run on diesel, on diesel engines, okay, traditionally. And they don't have one, but three engines, okay? So if you look at the locomotive, right, there are three engines in the back, okay, for backup. I don't know why they need three, okay, but they have three engines, okay? So I think they have a backup and a backup for the backup, okay? So, their thought is, what if I take one of these engines, take it out, and replace it with batteries, okay? And if you think about it, that seems like a really neat idea, because have you ever seen a train try to stop? Okay, all that energy of the brakes, okay? So it's a massive object, right, with this giant load. So just if you manage to harness that inertial energy and put it in a battery, that gives you a huge boost in performance, right? Shouldn't it? And this is what this slide, this upper corner says, right? You have here the diesel engine. And the idea is that you're powering your train, okay, but suddenly you decide to brake, so you take that braking energy just like you do it in the hybrid vehicles and take 10% of that energy and put it into storage, okay? And of course you can also power the electronics because now you have these massive batteries in the back of your system, and these batteries are these, as you can see here. They're not very big, okay, and actually they run at a high temperature, somewhere between 200 and 300 degrees Celsius, okay? Because the reaction is exothermic, what you do is you melt the metallic sodium and the nickel in the system. Okay, the whole system is basically running in liquid form, okay, in the anode, okay? And as it runs, the reaction proceeds heating up the metal, right, liquefying it, okay, and as long as it's molten, you can use the system, okay, so because it generates this heat, it melts the system, and basically it's self-sustaining, okay, so, and it turns out that, well, and I didn't know that either, that the back of the train actually is really, really hot, okay, so it's actually a self-sustained system, and the hardest part is basically turning on the train, right, which you already do and spend some time on turning on the diesel engine, right? So it sounded like a win-win, okay? And well, they tells you there some of the savings, right? Here they're telling you how many gallons per locomotive per year you would have, okay? The reduction in emissions, and there would be a boost also in horsepower. And these batteries, as compared to the lithium-ion batteries, which last between 2 and 3 years, okay? In this case, their sodium nickel dichloride system lands all the way to 20 years, right? That sounded great. It sounds great. And if they can accomplish it, and actually they're doing it now, okay? And to give you an idea why you cannot use a lithium ion battery for this, okay? They created this slide, okay? And showing you the advantages of the different technologies. Okay, so the red arrow tells you the direction of higher power density, and the blue the green arrow tells you the direction of higher energy density. So the more power you have, the more power you have, the smaller your battery. And the reason for this is because the ions have to diffuse through the different layers, so the smaller the diffusion distances, or the smaller the resistive obstacles that the ions have to go through, the more the power that you get. Okay? But if you make a really big battery to store a lot of energy, then you have a lot of losses. Okay? So if you want a lot of energy, then you have to be all the way over here, right, in these giant containers, okay? And if you want a lot of power, then you have to have these really tiny containers, okay? So I guess it's equivalent to being able to drink a gallon of milk in one shot or having a shot of tequila in one shot, okay? Obviously, one you can drink in one shot even if you choke, right? And the other one, I don't know about you, I've never seen actually anyone drink a gallon of tequila in one shot either, right? But you can see and these are the different technologies, right? Supercapacitors are very, very convenient in that case, okay? Because they give you a lot of power, as you can see here in this plot, in this Ragone plot, okay? But very little energy density. Okay, we discussed this already 2 weeks ago, okay? Here you have, for example, technology like the nickel metal hydride, okay? But you can see how they're scaling here in this other plot, which I really like this way in which they presented it, but what I want for you guys to pay attention to is that the classic sodium nickel chloride system, okay, gives you about 100 watt hours per kilogram. And what they found out is that, maybe 200. And what they found out is that by engineering it, they can actually double that, and they expect that in the near term they can increase it even further. Okay, so. To my understanding, if you just go on a search engine and then just search for this battery, you will find the company, you will find all the different things that are being right now produced. Okay, I found it extremely interesting. Okay, and that just showed you that technology. Now, for applications such as vehicles, you would not necessarily use this battery, this sodium-based battery, for a Prius, and you can see why, right? You can see the power that you need for different technologies. For example, for the Prius and other economy vehicles, you are favoring, even though you have here the amount of, you have some power, you don't care as much as, you care about power, but you don't need that much energy as compared to a locomotive. You can see here how there's a factor basically of 100 in comparison, okay? And the energy storage that you have in a hybrid vehicle is much smaller as compared to you would have in a hybrid locomotive, right? Basically, it is, and of course, if you take the ratio of power versus energy, electric and hybrid vehicles, that as the ones we would use in a city, are more power-based, mostly because we're basically taking off all the time, right? You know, we have to, I think you wouldn't want to be behind a car at a stoplight, okay, if that car weren't able to start fast. Okay, I'm sure you would rather just pass it on the left and keep going. Okay, so the power is important for an electric or a hybrid vehicle because you need to take off from the red light. Okay, so that's on that end. So, but for a train, well, that is not an issue, right? You basically have just one single engine on the track, and, well, you just want to store that energy, right, to be able to use it on demand. So for these devices, then you need something that actually gives you a lot of energy, even if you don't get that much of power, okay? Okay, so now this is the picture that you have in your notes, okay? And historically, the sodium nickel dichloride system, the way it was created, it was actually, from what I read, and you'll find that in the notes too, okay, it was invented during World War II. Apparently, where the first place it appeared, it has been in South Africa. Okay, and after that, basically no one cared much about it, right? It basically was just an academic curiosity, right? Because of course, for the high temperature. And the basic design is that you have this nickel dichloride and a sodium aluminum tetrachloride mixture of basically of particles, okay, that you have in the classic design in the jacket. Then the separator, right, what separates the anode from the cathode, okay, is a layer of aluminum oxide, of alumina, and at that temperature, the beta phase, not the alpha phase, is the most stable one, okay? So why do you want that? Because you want, in this case, the sodium ions to go from the anode to the cathode. Okay, so let me sketch it here very briefly. Let's see, yeah, I'm gonna erase this. Alumina would not work in other systems, okay, because aluminum oxide has a very low diffusivity, but in this case, you have beta alumina, okay, and you have in between this sodium ions being exchanged between both electrodes, okay? And at that temperature, and here we're talking about 300 degrees Celsius, it's so hot that the ions can actually hop within that crystalline lattice, okay? If you bring this down to room temperature, for all practical purposes, this is a full insulator, okay? Electronically, alumina is still an electronic insulator, okay? The electronic band gap is very wide, but the ions can hop through, okay? So that's the advantage, okay? And my guess is, if this is indeed the original design, okay, and of course they had an iron rod in the middle and the liquid sodium, okay, so they can extract or exchange the electrons between both the cathode and anode layers, okay, and my guess is that they had this setup so that they have double insulation, okay, you have the nickel dichloride external part, right, which is made out of particles, okay, and then you put in this case another container inside of beta alumina, okay, for the electrolyte or the separator, if you may, okay, and in there you will have the sodium, the liquid sodium, so that you have a double insulation in case you have a spill, okay. That is not, however, the design from the modern design, okay. And what you have instead is this other different approach to doing things. In this case now. This is how it macroscopically looks like. Okay, now you have this steel case. Okay, basically the whole battery is living in a steel container. Okay, the outside part here, you can see it here, it's where the molten sodium lives. Okay, so you have a steel case and then you immediately have the liquid sodium. Okay, and instead of having this one single monolithic layer of alumina, now they maximize the area, right, by wrapping it around it, right? So basically, you put a cylindrical container, you have so much area to exchange ions, but they say, in this case, I'm really just making a guess, but if I were to design it, I would put here an area per unit volume as large as possible so that I can exchange ions between both electrodes and increase my power. And now in the center, in this region, is where I put my mixture of particles, where I have my nickel dichloride, my sodium chloride as it may form, okay, and basically all the cathode components, okay, in the system. Okay, so the design completely changed, as you can see. My thought as to, and again, I'm just making a guess based on what I see, since molten sodium is still metallic, my guess is that it would be much easier to extract electrons across that than extract them across that solid porous system. Okay, so my guess is that's why they're doing it that way. And in here in the middle, you have this nickel current collector in the middle, okay, and a carbon wick basically to maximize internal area as you shove it in there in this a bed of particles so that you can extract the electrons out, right? You basically give it a contact so that as you shove it in there, all the electrons are collected there and then they go from there into your load, okay? That's my guess as to why they design it that way, okay? So I think it's a very clever design, okay? And Well, this just shows you the reactions, okay? And as in this case, it's a cross section. You can see here again the cathode system made out of particles and how the wick, in this case, is brought all the way down to the middle, okay? And well, this cross section shows you that reaction, as I will discuss it in a minute, okay? Again, the anode is in its liquid form in the outside, and well, you have the electrolyte, the sodium aluminum dichloride is used here basically to allow exchange and permeate and be able to exchange the sodium ions and the electrons between the different particles. Okay, just like before with the lithium ion batteries, we needed to have something so that the electrons and the ions could be exchanged. Same way, okay, the conceptually is the same idea. Okay, and well, they also have their case, and well, I find very interesting here, right, the range of operation temperatures. It goes from 270 degrees C to 350 degrees C, okay? Why is that? Because that's the reaction, that's the range of temperatures where the reaction would proceed, okay? It's, of course, you also have the kinetics associated with that, but in principle, you want to specify a range of temperatures where you get the voltage that you want, okay, the equilibrium response of it, and you also have the kinetics that you need, okay, to get the power, okay? And notice that the voltage is not too high, okay? It's, you go from 3.4 to 1.8, depending on what the state of charge is, okay? And the open circuit potential, that would be the equilibrium potential for the commercial system, okay? It's 2.58. So you already know, just from looking at that, what the Gibbs free energy of transformation is for this overall reaction, okay? So by them giving you 2.58 volts, you should probably write it here, okay? I would say here for the modern system, and then from there, you know, I erased it a few minutes ago, you already know what the Gibbs free energy of transformation is, okay? And more interestingly, in that reaction, we lose, okay, or we give away, or we get two electrons, okay, for every two sodium ions as they are reacted, okay? So that also plays an important role, because that means that every single time the reaction proceeds, then we get two of them, right? And you can see the advantage between getting one electron as compared to getting two electrons, right? That should be some benefit on the reaction, okay? So I'm just going to walk through the charging and discharging process. When we charge the system, okay, we start with, in the porous, in this internal region, okay, we start with nickel, right? That's a nickel precipitates, nickel particles, okay, with, in this case, two of sodium chloride. This is basically table salt, okay? So notice already the and we also have to look at it from the environmental point of view. We're talking about sodium chloride and nickel, right? Both of them at room temperature quite safe, okay? And they react into nickel dichloride, still in the cathode side, and the two sodium ions plus the two electrons, okay? Those electrons are forced out, you know, basically we force them with a current source, we force them back into the anode, where we have our liquid sodium, okay? The sodium ions diffuses through the electrolyte, okay, through the what we've been calling the separator, okay, and with the two electrons forming then metallic non-ionized sodium, okay? So on one side, on this side, you can think of it as that we start with a lower level of liquid sodium, okay? And then as the reaction proceeds, as we charge it, we basically fill the external jacket of the battery. We start filling it up with sodium, okay? So how much sodium can we put in there? As much as space we have there available for it, okay? So that also, of course, plays some part in the engineering of that system, okay? And that's during the discharge, okay, I'm sorry, the charge. During the discharge, it goes the other way, right? We basically, and maybe should start, let's start here. I have sodium, I have two sodiums, and I extract two electrons that go through my resistive load, okay, and then I have two ionized sodiums that diffuse through the separator, okay, through the alumina solid electrolyte, right, or well, they call it in this case base, okay, and it crosses that distance, and the electrons that went through the resistive load enter through, in this case, through this current collector, okay, and in that case, those two sodium ions that diffuse with react with the two electrons and nickel dichloride, forming sodium chloride and in this case nickel. Okay, and it seems to me that everything that I have there is perfectly environmentally friendly. Okay, it might not be the highest voltage battery, but hey, we can get between 20 and 100 amps. That's got to be pretty good. I mean, forget about for a second about locomotives, right? You can think of using this just for massive stationary energy storage facilities, okay? You can use that there, just put it, say, in the back of the hospital, right? And that should give you 100 amps. You can certainly use, you know, for an operation, right? And that seems to be very, very, as an option, right? I'm not saying this would be the solution, but this certainly gives you one potential avenue to pursue, okay? Interestingly enough, the resistance, at least the initial resistance of the reaction, is 10 milliohms, which is a very low resistance, okay? And, well, this is just telling you the pressures at which it operates, which I think it makes sense, okay? And, well, this is just a much more, another distribution of the different components. What I find the most interesting here, okay, is that the distribution of the weight, okay, notice that the separator, okay, the base occupies a big chunk of the battery, okay? So, well, I don't know what GE is doing at all, right? But if I were to engineer it, one of the things I would try to make thinner would be that distance, right? Because you can see from there, if I can take some material of that out, okay, I would certainly gain some energy, okay? Notice that the components between what happens in the anode and the cathode, I'm sorry, between the contribution, these two contributions of cathode granules and the electrolyte does have to do with how much of that I want to actually use as power, right? Because think of it as this being the equivalent of the porosity that we have before. Obviously, the more granules I have, the more energy density I would be able to store, but also the harder it would be to extract that energy, right? So I do have to have that in there. And something that I am consciously overlooking as we go through the material science of batteries, I'm not talking about the seals or the shims or the case, but you can see all of that is detrimental to the energy density because these contributions, you can see it here, that hole is it's more than 25% of the battery is, from the point of view of energy density, is dead weight, okay? So that lowers the energy density of the system. So let's see if there's anything I'm missing here. Well, you can also see a picture of the system. You can see here the current collector and the internal wick, right? That the carbon wick that they have there, so that that feathery thing made out of carbon, so that they can also extract electrons out of it. Okay. Well, all the elements seem to be pretty straightforward. And well, this is just another picture of the same thing. Okay, just a much more close-up. Basically, you have there the components of one of these batteries that you can see they're all being ran in parallel. At least this entire module is run in parallel. And well, you can see here the mixture of nickel and table salt. Probably you wouldn't put that in your food, but certainly wouldn't, unless they add something extra, it shouldn't kill you. The electrolyte in its solid form because its melting point, okay, my guess is this is why it has to operate at least at 200 degrees C, because the melting point of the electrolyte is 185 degrees, okay? And, well, the different components, which, if you think about it, it makes it a very inexpensive system, okay? Probably, well, and I really don't know much of the economics of the system, but if I were to make a guess, forming this alumina ceramic membrane would have to have a specific cost to actually assembling it. So most of the work, my guess, is on putting the pieces together. Now, this is the part where we actually connect to what we've been working on. And you can see there the reaction. So think about what phases we have in the system. Okay, what are the phases that are formed during this reaction? Okay, noticing that for the overall reaction, we have two sodiums, we have the nickel dichloride, okay, and the nickel dichloride particles, you can see them there, okay? You have the table salt, right, sodium chloride, and nickel, okay? So I'm going to reproduce or attempt to draw the Gibbs triangle here, try to make it as close as possible to what I have over there. Have the sodium on this side, the nickel on this side, and the chlorine on that side. What are the phases that I have in the system? I already have nickel, so I'm just going to check it. Okay, let's see. I have also sodium, so I'm going to check it. So what am I missing in this reaction? That I have to draw it in that diagram. If I really want to be able to engineer the powders that you saw here, okay? These powders, the fractions of each, are defined by that diagram, okay? And we have everything we need to figure it out, okay? So I'm going to go again one slide. If you have your slides, please do not look at them. Try to, well, so you can't participate. That's too bad. Again, for 300 degrees C, what phases am I missing to put here from that reaction?
NaCl2.
It's NaCl, isn't it? Oh, you said NiCl. Okay, NiCl2. So let's put it here. We have to put in there NiCl2. That means I have to be along this direction. Okay, I have to be twice as close to chlorine that I am to nickel. Okay, so if I divide this in three parts, okay, so I have to be two-thirds closer to chlorine than to nickel. Okay, so that corresponds probably to this point over here. Okay? That's one of the phases that definitely forms. Okay? We still have another phase missing.
NaCl.
Right, we have the NaCl. In this case, we have, well, we'll put it here. For NaCl, okay, if that's the only thing that shows up during this reaction, okay, that's all we need to describe what's going on. Okay? So, NaCl, well, we have one. We should be as close to the sodium side as we are to the chlorine side. Okay? So that means we have to be somewhere here. Okay? And that's it, right? That's a diagram. And these phases, I should put it here, NaCl, and these phases are the phases that will coexist, if at all, during a reaction. We want them to coexist. Because if we run out in its entirety of salt, man, that reaction that you see up there will not proceed, okay? So if we run out of NiCl2, that reaction will not proceed either, okay? So there has to be a tie line that I'm going to draw here between NaCl and NiCl2, okay? I do need the nickel too, so my guess is that there's also a line here as well, okay? Okay, so anything that happens in this system, okay, will occur in this triangle. Why? Because let's just say I'm on this side. Sodium is more likely to form on this side than on that side. Okay? Let me just draw another tie line because I do need sodium, right? If I am all sodium, okay, then I won't have anything either, right? If I'm on this corner, then the reaction doesn't proceed because I have no sodium, right? So anything should happen along this line. And probably the straightest line I've ever drawn. Okay? But it has to occur along that line. Okay? Right? So the operation of the battery should occur along that line. But since the space of operation is in this triangle, the further to the sodium side I can get is that point. Okay, do you see that? Because the moment I go over that point, then nickel dichloride, it stops being stable, so I cannot use it to store my material, right? I may have a mixture here in between here and there of sodium and sodium chloride, but that is not useful because that's not a battery, right? So I have to be here in this triangle. Okay? Do you see that? Okay, so in this case, well, that's the Verrill reaction. That's the line that I was telling you about. And that point, that's the sweet spot. Okay? If you want to make a battery, you probably want to start from this composition, and as it's being exchanged, okay? As it's being exchanged, you will go from one side of the triangle to the other one. Okay? Okay, now, what I find very interesting here, and we still have a couple minutes, is that the free energy transformation from that reaction to proceed from, in this case, from left to right, is of that magnitude. Okay? And if you divide that by ZF, then you will get that voltage, and well, this number, the current, that you cannot determine that theoretically with what we have, but the expected current is 45 amperes, okay? And so, now you can use this triangle to specify where you want your initial start and how far you can go. Your capacity of your battery will be in that range. If you want to specify or to maximize the capacity of your battery, you probably want to find the line that is the widest. Do you see that? Okay, so it's not the same if I am going along this line whose length has one value as if I go through that line, has a different length. That means the capacity of the battery, how much charge I can put in there depends on that width, on that length, as compared to this line. Okay? So, if you wanted to engineer this chemistry, you probably want to walk along this line about the sodium chloride nickel direction to basically tune the contributions so that you can specify what are the expected phase fractions during the reaction as it proceeds. Okay? If you don't get that, and the wider that line is, that's how much charge you're putting in and out. Okay? Just like we saw before, right? The charge that we have depends on the width of the regime where we have our voltage flat. Okay? And the moment we reach any of these corners, then the voltage will drop. Okay? Okay, any questions?
I couldn't understand why that triangle was chosen.
What this triangle was chosen?
Yeah,
because
there is no existence of sodium there. So.
There's no existence of sodium. Yeah, sodium is there, right? I mean, in this triangle, even here, as we were discussing last class, okay, the fraction of sodium that I will have, well, in this case, it's less than 50% at this corner, right? Because if this is 50%, okay, I can draw another line over here. Let's just say this would be 25%. Right, so somewhere between them, that's how much sodium I would have at that point.
As an element, would it be there? It's not there as an element, right?
It is not there as an element. Well, actually,
as a phase, as sodium, it's not.
Right. Well, and what you want is that reaction to proceed in one direction, right? So, and maybe I'm missing something. So you start on this point when the reaction occurs. Okay, if you have pure sodium. Okay? And on that side, and the moment you put it in, then you react into 2NaCl plus nickel on this side, depending on where you're standing. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. And that's the point. Okay? So you can pick each of any of these compositions along that line to specify where that will occur, right? And as you keep adding more and more sodium inside that triangle, then you will be displacing one phase with respect to the other one, based on the, in this case, well, the ternary phase rule, sorry, lever rule. Yeah, so that's the catch there. Okay.
If we want to proceed the reaction in the other direction, we should choose the other triangle.
Yes, that's right. Yes, if you wanted to go in the other direction, then you would want to favor in the other direction. And that's how electronically you just force material in one direction or the other one until the reaction is favored in one direction with respect to the other one. That's right. Absolutely right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
The previous specification, it says 270 to 350 UC operating temperature. And it says 20 years. That this puppy lasts. Does that mean that for 20 years this has 270 to 350 UC, like 24 hours a day? Pose some problem, I think, like maintenance or something.
Yes, you're right. There will be some maintenance issue if you wanted to this whole reaction to proceed for 20 years at that temperature. I agree with that. But you should also think that I can always, at the end of the day, turn off my battery. The whole thing will cool down, will turn into solid. It will not be a battery anymore, right? It will just, you know, just be all these phases completely solidified, right? And the next day, I want to start up my battery again. I just flick a switch and I would just preheat the system like you preheat an oven, right? You just heat it up, the reaction starts, then you turn it off because the reaction is self-starting, and then, you know, the whole thing continues. Okay? Yeah, so, yeah, yes, you can, of course, if you keep continuously doing that, it seems that it has very little maintenance from what they have reported, and you could run it for that long. So, this is obviously, this has been retooled, so this is a completely new technology with completely new issues. So, I mean, for all I know, they cannot now do it for a longer time or not, right? It depends on what application they're aiming for. And there are also new technologies based on this idea that are also popping out these days. Okay? Okay, any other questions? Yes?
We talked about beta alumina, and it allows sodium ions to go back and forth, but it doesn't allow electrons.
Yes.
Yeah, so is there any requirement? Does it need to, is it a crystalline or is it an amorphous material?
Ah, okay, so the question is whether or not the region insulating the electrons from going, only allowing the ions, has to be amorphous or crystalline. It really doesn't matter, okay, if it's amorphous or crystalline. You want to specify the properties to be adequate so that the reaction proceeds and allows you for the ions to be exchanged and the electrons to basically be put at bay, right, so that they don't pass. Okay, so I think the crystal structure may play a role if the diffusivity is very anisotropic, for example. Okay, in that case, you may probably want to orient the high diffusion direction so that your losses because of transport across that layer drop. Okay, or you may want to engineer the grain size if that's also important, right? But if that none of that matters, then it could be amorphous, right? And that would still be okay. Okay? Mm-hmm. And anything else? Okay, well, see you guys on Friday. Yeah, thank you.